What happens when Kubernetes and Go don't cooperate? In this episode of KubeFM, I got a chance to speak to Emin, who is a solutions architect at Hybird. He'll share with you about his experience when he faced an issue, more specifically, when a 502 bad gateway error appeared only in a specific production environment that was then traced to an out-of-memory or OOM issue. In this case, Go's garbage collector wasn't aware of Kubernetes memory limits, causing excessive memory allocation. Then, the logs show that Go's heap size kept growing until it exceeded the container's memory limits. To find out about what happened next, you'll have to stick around for the full episode, but you'll learn about how debugging Kubernetes issues often requires a systematic approach and that understanding resource limits is crucial in Kubernetes environments. This episode is brought to you by StormForge. StormForge Optimize Live continuously right-sizes Kubernetes workloads to ensure applications are cost-effective and performant while removing developer toil. As a vertical right-sizing solution, Optimize Live is autonomous, tunable, and works seamlessly with the Kubernetes HPA at scale. Free developers from the toil and complexity of setting CPU and memory requests with Optimize Live's fully configurable, machine learning-based recommendations and intelligent automation. Start a free trial or play around in the sandbox environment with no form fill required. Now, let's check out the episode. All right, Emin. So, what three emerging Kubernetes tools are you keeping an eye on?
I'm not really up to date with new emerging tool. Like, I just like the greatest hits and the things that I use in my daily work, like kubectl, Prometheus, Grafana, Minikube. Yeah, stuff like that.
Now, what do you do and who do you work for?
So I'm a software developer and solution architect at Ministry of Programming, a startup studio from Herzegovina that basically helps its clients create new products, iterate, and succeed faster. And currently I'm assigned as a solution architect at Hybird. It's an innovative asset management company in the oil and gas industry. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, fair enough. And how did you get into cloud native?
My journey started when I joined MOP, short for Ministry of Programming. Their technical direction at the time and still is to use cloud-native tools and frameworks and technologies as much as possible, unless clients require some other setup. So yeah, that was my, basically when I started working at MOP.
And what were you before cloud-native?
At my previous company, we mostly used Microsoft-related technologies and frameworks without any or very few cloud-native options. Most of the products we worked on were in mortgage industry, and they weren't very keen on using cloud-native tools back then.
And, you know, the Kubernetes ecosystem moves very quickly. How do you stay up to date with all the changes that are happening?
I can't say that I'm up to date with everything in Kubernetes and cloud-native ecosystem. I've always liked to describe myself as a software engineer and solution architect who prioritizes breadth over depth, but I can double down on specific if needed. One thing I like to do is to subscribe to various newsletters just to stay informed and keep in touch with everything that's going on in specific areas. And the other thing I really love to do is talk to my colleagues that have more depth in this area and learn as much as I can from them.
If you could go back in time and share one career tip with your younger self, what would it be?
I would say spend less time watching TV shows and more time on books, courses, and articles. But yeah, it hits you really, really fast. And unfortunately, I haven't learned the value of my free time until after I had kids. But yeah, in more technical perspective, I try to learn and try out as many different things as I can, rather than be master of few. It's just to keep your horizons more broad and to give you more opportunities and even more solution possibilities than and not limiting yourself.
Now, for our podcast today, we, found an article that you wrote with our monthly content discovery called When Kubernetes and Go Don't Work Well Together. Let's start out with the issue that you encountered. You mentioned a specific API endpoint was failing in one of your production environments. Can you walk us through what happened and how this problem first came to your attention?
Yeah, of course. So I got the report that our REST API service in one of the client production environments is returning SIO2 bad gateway error for a specific endpoint. So we went through the usual things, checked that and other environments to see if the issue manifests everywhere. And since all other services, I mean that specific service in other environments worked just fine. We isolated the issue to the specific environments and started investigating from in a bit more detail. So we went through the usual things, checked the logs, nothing was there. But one thing we could clearly see when we called the endpoint is that Kubernetes pod restarts every time the endpoint is called.
Now, before we dive too deep into the technical details, it would probably be helpful to understand more about your setup. Could you give us an overview of your production environment and the type of application you're running?
Yeah, our production setup for this REST API service and its container and pod is 20 millis for the CPU and 400 megabytes of RAM. And these are the limits. Although we have other services in our architecture setup, this service is the most used one and one containing all this logic. And also, it's good to mention that the problematic endpoint works differently than the other endpoints. It provides the data for the offline mode for the mobile apps, which basically means that it returns all of the data for the main project.
With that context in mind, I suppose we should return to the issue at hand. Debugging problems like this can be challenging. What were your initial steps in investigating this mysterious error?
When we isolated the problem to that one environment, where I said we checked the logs to see what happened. The odd thing was that there weren't any indication panic or critical errors. So the next step was to add more debug logs to determine where service stopped working. We ended up learning that it stops just after the JSON Markov function is called. And the main concern was why is this not working, especially since the data from the database returning to the service successfully and that function works everywhere else. So yeah, there were some questions to be answered.
Now, as you dug deeper into the pod's behavior, you mentioned discovering something interesting about its status. What did you find, and why was it surprising given what you knew about the application?
So after we determined where the service errored, next thing was that we checked pod and container related information that would give us more info. So you type in kubectl describe pods, and basically there it was, the OM guild status, which basically means that the container went out of memory, and it was terminated for that specific reason. So we wanted to test this out and do a quick test. We scaled up resources to 400 CPUs and 800 megabytes of RAM. Triggered the endpoint again and was working properly. But the weird thing was that the endpoint returned a response of 66 megabytes, which was way below our 400 megabyte limit.
Now, OOM killed status is a critical issue in Kubernetes. I think it's a known fact, but it might not be familiar to all of our listeners who perhaps don't have experience with it. Could you explain when OOM occurs in Kubernetes and how it relates to the container resource limits you've set?
Yeah, certainly. So when a process that is running inside the Kubernetes pods tried to allocate more RAM than it has been defined as its container limits, the out-of-memory error is drawn to prevent misuses. And at that point, the daemon restarts the container and the pod to prevent allocating more memory than was set. To put it in the context of our REST API service setup, if the service tries to allocate more than 400 megabytes of RAM, the container and pods are terminated to prevent that. And if we get back to our findings, the question remains the same. How can a 66 megabyte response cause an out-of-memory error for a pod with 800 megabyte limit?
This seems to point to an interesting interaction between Go and Kubernetes. Based on your investigation, what did you discover about how Go was behaving in this containerized environment?
So the answer, after some research, the answer pointed to two things. One was how Go's garbage collector works, and the other one was how Go processes or programs work in a containerized environment. So first thing, a short introduction, Go's garbage collector, Go's garbage collector is in charge of checking if there's some heap memory that can be freed up and frees up memory, among other things, and runs in cycles. And before each cycle, it determines if more heap memory needs to be allocated to that process or not. And the answer is yes, it allocates more RAM specific. And the default setting of this is that it doubles the amount of RAM previously used this. The other part of the answer is how Go works in a computerized environment. So when a Go process is running inside a container, it doesn't know about the resource limits that are set upon the container by itself. It's only aware of the limits of the machine that the container is running. For example, if we deploy a container with memory limits of 400 megabytes to a machine that has 8 gigabytes of RAM, the Go process knows only about 8 bytes of RAM. And when the garbage collector runs and expands the allocated memory, it will not stop at the 400 megabyte limit.
That's a fascinating insight into how language runtimes can interact with containerized environments. How did you go about confirming that this was indeed part of what was happening in your case?
Yeah. At that point, this was just theory based on Windsurf research. To confirm this theory, we changed the Go debug environment variable to include trace logs for the garbage collector. And with this in place, we were able to see how garbage collector worked, and that at the point where just before the process was terminated, it was able to allocate 260 megabytes of RAM. So that means before the next run, the garbage collector tried to allocate more than 500 megabytes of RAM, which is more than the 400 megabyte limits, and the container system terminated the container and the pod on that request.
Now that you had identified the root cause, it was time to find a solution. What approach did you take to address this mismatch between Go's memory management and the container's limits?
One thing that was added introduced with Go 1.19 is the Go memlimits environment variable. And this environment variable is used as a soft limit for a Go process that is running on a specific machine, specific environment. By default, this environment variable is not set, but when it is set to a specific value, the garbage collector works more aggressively to try to free up more memory and to keep the memory below the set value. This approach worked for us because when approaching to the limits, the garbage collector doesn't double the allocated memory anymore, but runs more and uses that memory more efficiently. And in our example, when we set this limit, set this environment variable, the garbage collector didn't try to allocate more than 400 megabytes of RAM, and we got the 66 megabyte response when triggering the endpoint.
It's interesting that this requires manual configuration. Why do you think it's that this isn't automatically handled, and what are the implications of needing to set Go mem limit ourselves?
I think that it stems from the fact that Go has been designed to be bottom-up by nature, and this one is even more important, that by default, all the default settings work best for the most cases. Sure, there are always trade-offs. We can set the Go mem limit to a specific value, but then you will have the scenario that the garbage collector works more often and more aggressively, and it takes away runtime from your service.
Now that you've implemented the solution, how effective was it in resolving the issue? Are there any potential drawbacks or limitations to this approach?
Even this worked for us. It was a temporary fix. Long term, we had to refactor the problematic endpoint, move some memory allocations from heap to stack, and implement paging for the endpoint. So I would say a less working bolt, really big memory allocations, to always use the default settings and use Go very carefully.
This experience seems to highlight some important considerations for developers working with Go and Kubernetes. What do you see as the key takeaways from this incident?
One key thing I would take from this experience is how much language runtime interaction there is when you try to tune your services to work in containerized environments as best possible. As always, like most of the time, this is not needed, but when you want your mission critical services to perform well, it's really a must. Similar scenarios to this would involve utilizing the CPU resources more optimally. For example, in an environment like a Kubernetes cluster, your workloads are deployed together with Kubernetes related workloads that help with running your Kubernetes cluster more smoothly on one or more physical machine. And all of those workloads fight for the same CPU resources of the cluster nodes. And if your setup doesn't involve some careful plan, which workloads are deployed where, unless you set up some runtime limitations on how much CPU can be used by each workload or set CPU affinities, you will probably not be able to have predictable performance outcomes.
Now, it seems that, you know, your experience could challenge some common assumptions about containerization. How does this case study reflect the reality of running applications in containerized environments, particularly when it comes to the idea that containers provide a universal solution?
Okay, so it's time for everyone's favorite answer. It depends. In the majority of the cases, you will be totally fine with containerized environments as universal solutions. In all other cases, as few as they are, they involve going deep into the internals of language runtimes and containerized environments and understanding them really well. Or even in some cases, as some studies, case studies point out, ditching the containerized environments altogether. This really depends on the business and technical requirements and costs and benefits of pursuing optimization to that extent. At this point, I would like to paraphrase Mark Richards and Neil Ford when they say, like, most of the time, you're not going for the best possible solution, but the least worst one.
Great way of putting it. This has been an incredibly insightful discussion. For our listeners who are out there who might be facing similar issues or that might want to dive deeper into this topic, are there any resources or final pieces of advice that you'd like to share?
Yeah, sure, definitely. There are great Hardin-led articles about optimizing your Go programs and workloads, both for memory and CPU consumption. The Reviate blog post on how Go Memory Emit help them out, and also point out the Go's official documentation on garbage collection and how it works is extensive and, a fun read.
Now, what's next for you?
I'll continue to learn and explore, as always. I'm very interested in all things related to performance improvements, so that is and will be my main learning path. For now, I don't write very often, and I usually write about experience, the stuff that I experienced, and about interesting topics that are less covered and not easy to find on the internet. So if you don't hear from me in a while, it means either I don't have time to write or that there weren't any interesting production issues.
It's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
If people want to continue the conversation and get in touch with you, What's the best way to do so?
I have a couple of blogs, Hashnode and Medium blog, and also I'm available on LinkedIn. So yeah, feel free to say hi, ask questions, share your concerns or different opinions. I'm always happy to hear from anyone.
Very good. And we're happy to hear from you. Easy to reach out and connect. Thank you so much for sharing your time and knowledge today. It's great to get, you know, your perspective on this. This is a topic that hasn't necessarily come up in other episodes that we've done. So I'm sure our audience will be very keen to hear from you and also to read about the other work that you're doing. Emin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This was great. Thank you.
My pleasure. Cheers.